Good morning, everyone. This is Dennis, mailbox 3030. I'll be doing the health report for today. Today is August 21st. There's a whole article here about chronic pain. It says one in five Americans have that. We'll talk about that today. It says one in five Americans has chronic pain, and many are desperate for safe and effective treatments. As awareness of the dangers of opioids grows, we explore the latest research on supplements, massage, aquatic exercise, sleep, and more. As a teenager, Michael Davis was a competitive soccer player, a runner, and a bit of a daredevil. Around this time, he remembers a dull throbbing ache took hold in his back. He didn't think much of it at first, but after a few years, the ache had escalated to frequent headaches and shooting pain, first down his right leg, then into his neck and shoulders. His daily life was marked by chronic discomfort and pain. Years after the first signs, x-rays revealed the culprit to be earlier undiagnosed fractures in Davis's lower vertebra. The initial injury had healed, but the damage left nerves still signaling pain, which spread and worsened. I was an upbeat kid, but I became more of a pessimist, says Davis, now 27, who lives in Dallas. In my darkest moments, I just wanted to retreat from life. Chronic pain is a common problem for Americans, touching all ages, groups, and demographics. A report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention last fall estimated that one in five adults, about 50 million Americans, reported hurting every day and almost every day in the previous 6 months. Nearly 20 million reported pain so severe it limited their ability to work, socialize, and even take care of themselves and their family. Davis eventually found relief using physical therapy, yoga, and other strategies we've detailed in this guide. But by the time he found a way out, pain had ruled his life for over a decade. It says one of the issues is a shortage of expertise. For years, Davis bounced around among healthcare providers as he searched for a way to stop the pain. Surgeons operated on his spine and shoulder. He underwent nerve block treatments and injections of steroids and blood platelets. Nothing helped. Medications, including over-the-counter pain relievers, muscle relaxants, opioids, and others, provided some relief, he says, but the pain always came roaring back. It was like putting a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound. People with chronic pain frequently have trouble assessing the right care, says David Claw, MD, Director of Chronic Pain and Fatigue Research at the University of Michigan. One problem is that there are far too few trained pain specialists. According to one report prepared for Congress by a task force of 29 experts, for every physician certified in pain care, there are more than 28,500 Americans living with chronic pain. Many primary care doctors, quotation, learn to treat chronic pain the same way they treat short-term pain from surgery or by injury, and that is with steroids, Claw says. But most evidence shows that potent drugs don't work well against long-term pain, and they come with the risks of addiction, misuse, and overdose. From 2012 to 2018, as opioids came under more increased scrutiny, the number of doctors writing new prescriptions dropped by nearly one-third, according to a recent analysis of insurance claims published by the New England Journal of Medicine. Safer, more effective, often non-pharmaceutical alternatives are gaining favor. In a 2018 JAMA review, Claw and colleagues outline an approach for treating chronic pain that can include surgery and medication, but relies primarily on other treatments such as counseling, mindfulness and meditation, hands-on therapies, and exercise. Mounting evidence shows that this combination of strategies, some of which are covered by insurance, works well against chronic pain. So it says, why is there no perfect pill? Davis began to get his life back after he stopped looking for a silver bullet cure, such as surgery or the perfect drug. Instead, he built a plan with pieces of what he had learned from practitioners and trial and error along the way. Now an accountant at a large firm, Davis adjusted his workspace so that he wasn't hunched over or straining. He also worked with a physical therapist to develop a regimen of exercise and stretches to fit in during short breaks in his workday. He started and ended each day with a few minutes of yoga, followed by a healthy diet, and got enough sleep. Gradually, his pain eased. After 3 or 4 months, he stopped taking opioids, which he'd taken intermittently to control major spikes in pain, and now only occasionally takes an over-the-counter pain reliever. I've become more attuned to my body, he says. When I have a flare-up, I know the stretches that will help. Today, while he still has some pain, it's levels down from where it used to be. Just to be able to run again, it's amazing. Davis's journey into and eventually out of chronic pain reflects the latest understanding of why pain can linger and increase after injury is healed, and what it takes to get better, says David Taubin, MD, Chief of Pain Medicine at the University of Washington School of Medicine. Pain is an alert, a signal from the brain that there is something really wrong you need to pay attention to for your survival, be that a rock in your shoe or a broken ankle, he says. Typically, the pain fades after you address the problem and the body has a chance to heal. But sometimes the nervous system malfunctions, he says. It gets stuck in the position of, I'm hurt and I'm in danger. Medications can help ease the pain, but calming the nervous system requires non-drug measures, Taubin says. Treatment plans vary, he says, but they are based on the same core elements. Medical treatment for underlying health problems, physical activity to help restore function, and psychological counseling to help you identify and change thought patterns and behavior that can worsen pain. It says, make a personalized plan. For many chronic pain sufferers, it can be challenging to find effective long-term care that is also covered by insurance. States are pushing insurers to cover more non-drug treatments, and patients can access some resources on their own through community centers, books, and apps. Still, talking and listening to pain patients and working through all of the non-drug and non-opioid options is time-consuming for doctors and not especially lucrative, Claus says. Even so, some medical professionals, particularly primary care physicians, are starting to focus on non-invasive and non-opioid options to treat pain. In the 2017, the American College of Physicians, which represents primary care doctors, issued guidelines for treating back pain that recommended non-drug measures as the first option. Shop around until you find a doctor who will take time to listen to you, says Jill Schneiderman, MD, co-director of Integrative Family Medicine at the University of Michigan Medical School. If you can't find a clinic that specializes in treating pain, Schneiderman says, a good primary care doctor can also help you find a network of practitioners with different areas of expertise, including a physical therapist, for example, who can collaborate on your treatment. Our guide on the following pages examines the risks and benefits of three types of treatment: sleep, exercise, and hands-on therapies, drugs and supplements, and surgeries and injections. You should work with your doctor to figure out the combination of treatments that makes the most sense for you. Schneiderhan also recommends talking to your doctor about how you'll measure progress. Reducing pain is important, but the most important goal might be improving your ability to move through your daily activities. Pain can vary widely, she says. If we just focus on that, we miss the bigger picture that there's this living we are trying to do. So the next section is massage, mindfulness, sleep, posture therapies, and more. Any single non-drug approach to treating chronic pain, such as acupuncture or yoga, might only offer modest benefits. But research suggests that combining the treatments is the key to lasting pain relief. The current state of treatment on chronic pain is that we have a lot of treatments that work a little bit, says Claw. As you and your doctor develop a treatment plan, don't hesitate to discard a strategy that offers no improvements after a few weeks, he says. Move on and try something else. The first is, it says, don't skimp on sleep. Numerous studies have shown that poor sleep can worsen pain, in part because exhaustion can adversely affect brain function. I can't help you manage your pain if your brain is on fire, says Taubin, the University of Washington director. Taubin and other experts Consumer Reports interviewed said that getting enough sleep can be challenging for people with chronic pain, but that it should be one of the first goals in a treatment plan. A psychologist or counselor who specializes in chronic pain can help devise strategies for better sleep, such as sleeping in a dark, quiet room and limiting the use of devices and caffeine before bedtime. The second, it says, get a move on. People's instinctive reaction to pain can also set off a vicious cycle of worsening disability, says Beth Darnell, a clinical professor of anesthesiology at Stanford. They may move less for fear of increasing their pain, which allows muscles to atrophy and negatively impacts mood and sleep. The way to keep from being dragged into that cycle or to get out of it is to incorporate appropriate types of movement into your daily routine. Physical activity can reduce pain and improve people's ability to move through their day, according to a Cochrane review of 264 studies involving nearly 20,000 adults with chronic pain. A physical therapist can offer strength and stretching exercises tailored to a person's needs and abilities. And regular walking, aquatic exercise, and posture improvement programs, such as the Alexander technique and the Feldenkrais method, can help reduce pain and make movement easier. Also consider forms of exercise that incorporate mindfulness, such as Tai Chi and yoga. In a 2017 Consumer Reports nationally representative survey of 3,500 back pain sufferers, 89% of respondents who went to a yoga or Tai Chi instructor for help said the advice or treatment was beneficial. The next says, try hands-on healing. Last year, a comprehensive research review published by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality found good evidence that acupuncture helped with chronic back and neck pain and fibromyalgia, that massage helped with chronic back pain and fibromyalgia, and that spinal manipulation helped with chronic back pain and tension headaches. And a 2017 review by the American College of Physicians found that heat can help ease back pain. Hands-on therapies help in two ways, Schneiderhan said. A therapist with a solid understanding of anatomy and physiology can help address a physical problem that is triggering pain. For example, massage can break up scar tissue, improve circulation, and help relax tight muscles that may be putting pressure on nearby nerves. These therapies also can help bring back people into their bodies, she says. People struggling with long-term pain tend to disconnect and no longer register cues about what doesn't feel good. Hands-on treatments increase awareness of the many small factors that contribute to pain, such as slouching at a desk for hours. The next suggestion is to harness brain power. The gold standard for psychological treatment of chronic pain is cognitive behavioral therapy. Through a limited goal-oriented set of CBT sessions, typically 7 to 12, the therapist can teach a patient to identify thoughts and behaviors that worsen pain and replace them with new thought patterns designed to calm the nervous system and relieve pain. Ask your doctor for a referral or look for a therapist who has training and experience in treating chronic pain, Darnell says. You can search for providers through the Association of Behavioral and Cognitive Therapies and the American Psychological Association. CBT for pain is generally covered by insurance, and sessions can take place in person, online, or by phone. Other psychological approaches, such as progressive relaxation exercises, mindfulness, and meditation, alone or with CBT, also have been shown to reduce pain. The third section of this is fish oil, anti-inflammatories, muscle relaxants, and more. The goal of pills, patches, and creams is to take the pain down a couple of notches to allow for exercise, work, and socializing activities vital to recovery. But set realistic expectations, says Claude, the University of Michigan pain doctor, and always start with the safest option in the lowest dose that's helpful. The risk of more potent drugs, such as opioids, often outweigh the benefits. Pardon me. In a best-case scenario, one-third of people taking any single drug will reduce their pain level by half, Claw says. Most get far less relief. So the first suggestion is supplements. There is no solid data supporting most pain relief supplements, including glucosamine and chondroitin. Marijuana may relieve certain types of pain, and while little research has been done in humans, preliminary findings suggest that cannabidiol, a cannabis compound found in marijuana, can reduce inflammation, which could alleviate pain. Fish oil reduces inflammation and helps some with rheumatoid arthritis. Research has linked vitamin B and D deficiencies to certain types of pain. The second is over-the-counter drugs. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, such as ibuprofen and naproxen, work primarily by reducing painful swelling. Acetaminophen reduces your brain's perception of pain. NSAIDs are typically better for muscle and joint pain, Tobin says, but neither is effective against nerve pain, such as that from shingles. NSAIDs can be powerful. A 2017 JAMA study showed that patients who received ibuprofen plus acetaminophen for severe pain reported the same amount of pain reduction as those who received an opioid plus acetaminophen. Always check with your doctor before combining any drugs, taking more than a recommended dose, or continuing an OTC drug for longer than 10 days. Side effects from ibuprofen can include heart attack or stroke, stomach bleeding, and kidney disease for acetaminophen or liver disease. Topical pain relievers. Pain relievers in cream and patch form, OTC or prescription, may cause fewer side effects than pills because less of the drug is absorbed into the bloodstream. Their ingredients can help in one of three ways. One, by reducing pain and inflammation. Secondly, by producing a feeling of heat or cold to keep nerves from busy, keep nerves busy, transmitting those sensations instead of pain. They can provide some relief from mild to moderate, but pain may not, but mild to moderate pain, but not enough for severe symptoms. Prescription drugs. The first says antidepressants. The only antidepressant approved for treating certain types of pain is duloxetine, which is Cymbalta. But for years, doctors have prescribed other antidepressants off-label. Small doses can help with fibromyalgia, headache prevention, and pain due to nerve damage. The drugs affect brain chemicals that regulate pain and mood, so they can help in people who aren't depressed. But they can come with side effects such as weight gain, constipation, and suicidal thoughts. Second are anticonvulsants. Three drugs to prevent seizures are also FDA approved and increasingly prescribed for certain types of nerve pain. There's a gabapentin, which is Neurontin, a pregabalin, which is Lyrica, and carbamazepine, which is Epitol, which can cause deadly allergic reactions. Studies suggest that they help with nerve pain, but not common ills such as back pain. Side effects can include suicidal thoughts. Next are muscle relaxants. Drugs such as Amrix can be useful against a pain flare-up, but there's no evidence that taking them longer than 3 weeks is helpful, and feeling groggy can hinder recovery. Avoid carisoprodol, which is Soma, because it carries a high risk of abuse and addiction, and never take these alongside opioids. And the final one is opioids. These drugs, which include codeine, oxycodone, hydrocodone, and sometimes combined with an acetaminophen, should be considered only if no other treatments work or if there are more benefits than risk for the individual patient, according to the American College of Physicians. They work well in short term for severe pain from an injury or from surgery, but not against chronic pain because they often lose effectiveness over time and can increase sensitivity to pain as well as carry risks of addictions and overdose. Possible side effects include constipation, breathing problems, confusing, irritability, and sedation. Finally, steroids and surgeries. 5 years ago, Austin Kessler of Driftwood, Texas, was lifting a rock in his yard when he heard a loud pop. It was his back, and he fell to ground in excruciating pain. The 66-year-old suffered a herniated or slipped disc. His primary care doctor referred him to an orthopedist who recommended surgery. When Kessler's wife asked whether there are alternatives, the surgeon says, "No, you can try, but I guarantee it won't work and you will be back," Kessler remembers the doctor saying. After a second opinion, Kessler decided against surgery, and his pain abated over time with physical therapy and exercise. This is not uncommon. Orthopedic surgery has more people seeking second opinions than any other specialty, according to one study of thousands of patients. More than a third of these second opinions lead to a change in treatment plan. Surgeries and injections do help in certain cases, but they carry more risk than most other treatments, so you should generally seek a second opinion. If a doctor is pushing surgery, says David Hanscom, an orthopedic specialist at Swedish Medical Center in Seattle, seek a second opinion. Hanscom starts with a prehab, working with patients on sleep, stress, and exercise. Most improve enough that they don't need surgery, he says. The next is steroid injections. For decades, doctors have commonly treated painful joints by injecting a corticosteroid to reduce inflammation and decrease pain. The shots don't speed healing, but they can provide modest short-term relief and are an excellent stopgap measure. If a pain flare-up is keeping you from moving, says Lisa Mandel, associate professor at Weill Cornell, but more than two or three shots a year may damage joint cartilage. Steroid shots are also sometimes used in the epidural space outside the sac of fluid around the spinal cord. But a misplaced needle can cause rare but serious complications, including stroke, paralysis, and even death. These are safer in the buttocks or legs, Hansen says, and can temporarily ease the pain of a slipped disc or sciatica. And then finally, it says surgeries. Before proceeding with surgery, ask, am I a good candidate? Surgery is most likely to help when an underlying structural problem is the cause of the pain. If the pain is widespread or severe, despite only minor damage visible on an X-ray, a sensitized nervous system is more likely to be the problem. He says, in that case, surgery won't help. Are there other options? Surgery does not necessarily lead to better results than safer treatment. Arthroscopic knee procedures to repair cartilage are among the most common surgery in the U.S., yet studies have shown that they don't improve symptoms any better than physical therapy. Exercise and physical therapy work as well as or better than surgery for minor rotator cuff injuries and low back pain, according to research reviews. Surgery may speed recovery from a slipped disc or spinal stenosis, but those using non-invasive therapies for at least 2 years fare just as well. So what results can I expect? More than 90% of people who have a hip replacement are pain-free 10 to 15 years later. Knee replacements improve mobility, but about 20% of recipients have ongoing pain. People who fully commit to rehab tend to have the best outcomes. So it says, is it all in your head? It's already difficult to find appropriate treatment for chronic pain, but a growing body of research shows that some groups are more likely than others to face diagnostic delays and undertreatment. Physicians tend to dismiss women's pain a lot more than they do men's, says Penny Cowan of the American Chronic Pain Associates. According to a 2014 study review of more than 2,400 women with a variety of chronic pain indicators, 91% felt that the healthcare professional discriminates against female patients. Nearly half were told the pain was all in their head. It's also common, particularly for women with pelvic and menstrual pain, caused by conditions such as endometriosis and fibroids, to be told that their pain is just a normal part of being a woman. Evidence shows that women's pain is also often less thoroughly investigated, especially initially, when the cause of pain is unknown. A recent study of nearly 1,000 patients at an urban emergency room found that women waited an average of 16 minutes longer than men to get medication when reporting abdominal pain and were less likely to receive it. Other research has shown that clinicians are more likely to suggest psychosocial causes such as stress or family problems to female patients in pain when they would order lab tests more frequently for a male patient with similar symptoms. Studies have also shown that racial bias can affect how doctors assess and treat pain. An analysis of 20 years of published research in the U.S. found that African-American patients reporting pain were 22% less likely than white patients to get pain medication from their doctors. The gap was largest when the cause of pain, such as back pain, was not immediately apparent. Another study found that African-American patients reported less effective pain management than white patients. One factor is, the experts say, that some healthcare providers believe that falsely that patients of color are more likely to abuse prescription painkillers. Other research suggests that doctors nationwide, about 72% are white, often underestimate the pain level of minority patients. A lot of work in the social sciences has shown that you're more emphatic to people in your in-group than you are in your out-group. Half of the hundreds of white medical students and residents surveyed in a 2016 study subscribed to at least one myth about supposed racial differences related to pain, such as believing that nerve endings of black people were less sensitive than those from white people. The research found that those who believed in more myths were more likely to rate a black patient as having less pain and to under-treat accordingly. Experts say the age of a patient also plays a role. Some physicians see pain as an inevitable part of the aging process. Older patients often report that they are told, "What do you expect? You're getting older." Pain is also frequently ignored in children, particularly among those too young to communicate effectively. A recent study in the pediatric emergency department found that more than half of children younger than two with obviously painful injuries such as broken bones and burns were not given any medication at all. So there's your study on chronic pain. I'm hopeful that somewhere in this there's a therapy that you can find useful. Opioids, hopefully not being the inevitable issue with that, based upon the potential side effects that go with that. But do what you can, as we always try to talk in this, a little bit of exercise and moving around and just doing something and keeping as physically fit as you can goes a long way towards that, as well as helping your mental fitness. Anyway, hope you have a great day, a great week. I hope you're healthy. I hope you're happy. And I will talk to you next week. Thank you for listening.